You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Sarah Vaughn. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, March 14th, 2019.
And all those things add up to about $1.4 million now, and that doesn't include the design soft costs. So we're really estimating another couple $100,000 for the design bid and construction inspection.
The Bloomington City Council is expected to revisit their decision to repair instead of replace the downtown 4th Street parking garage. We'll hear from Deputy Mayor Mick Renison about the city's plans for the 4th Street parking garage in today's feature report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks area residents their opinions on the media. That's coming up later in the program, but first, your daily headlines.
The U.S. Senate voted today to block President Donald Trump's declaration of an emergency at the U.S.-Mexico border. Earlier this month, President Trump called on Congress to approve his declaration of an emergency along the southern border. This afternoon, the Senate voted to veto the president's emergency declaration. Some Republicans in the Senate broke party ranks and voted to block the president's emergency declaration. Indiana Senators Mike Braun and Todd Young, however, supported the president's move. In a statement earlier today, Young, the senior senator, stated, "After weeks of careful study and discussion, I have decided to vote to preserve President Trump's national emergency declaration. It is clear that the president's declaration adheres to decades-old statutes and procedures laid out in federal law, and there is no question that a national crisis exists at our southern border," unquote. Former Indiana Senator Joe Donnelly, who was replaced by Braun in November, also announced he's landed a job at a top lobbying firm in Washington, D.C. The six-year senator will become a partner at Aiken Group, where he will serve as a law and public policy analyst. Senators face a two-year ban on lobbying the legislature. The Indy Star reports the former Democrat will advise clients on financial services, health care, and defense sectors. In other national news, Indiana presidential hopeful Pete Buttigieg slammed Vice President and former Indiana Governor Mike Pence on Sunday. Buttigieg called Pence, quote, "a cheerleader for the porn star president," unquote, while at an event in Austin, Texas on Sunday. The Democratic candidate and openly gay mayor gave his final State of the City address in South Bend last night. Buttigieg announced his candidacy for the Democratic presidential nomination in January.
Monroe County Clerk Nicole Brown is asking for a pay raise for Election Day poll workers. Brown approached the Monroe County Commissioners in a work session yesterday. She said she hopes raising the pay will remove one barrier to people stepping up to help with elections.
I would like to increase the poll worker pay by $25 for the day and the couriers who go to the different sites to $12 an hour.
According to Brown, the poll worker pay has remained the same for 5 years. Commissioner Amanda Marge told Brown she would support an even larger pay increase.
I guess to me, as I fully support raising it, but I definitely don't think we can look at it as a minimum wage kind of thing because it's not a daily job. It's just a one-day thing, and I would support paying even more.
I really wanted to ask you for more.
Yeah.
I felt like I should hedge my bets a little.
The commissioners also asked Brown to review the current rate of pay for the various Election Day poll workers.
For inspectors, $140 per day. Judges, $110 per day. Clerks, $110 per day. Sheriffs, $90 per day. Obviously, that's on election, but as I explained, they come the night before and they're there longer than the polls are open.
Brown noted that workers who help with absentee and early voting are paid by the hour. Commissioner Julie Thomas recommended they also look at the hourly rate, which is currently $10.50 an hour. Brown offers training for poll workers prior to Election Day. She said offering more money helps to ensure that she has dependable people on hand when she needs them. Brown assured the commissioners she has the money in her budget to support a pay increase for the May primary election. Officials noted, however, that the 2020 presidential election will be more expensive to staff.
The fact of the matter is that we are going to go into a presidential election, and I cannot, trying to recruit poll workers in a presidential where I'm going to need exponentially more than what I'm asking for now. I'd rather have it in place now.
Brown said some poll workers are county government employees who work even though the county gives them the election day off.
Those are our most loyal, trusted people because they're already vested in Monroe County government. So then when I have to look those people in the eye and say, I'm really sorry, it would have been better for you to stay home, you know, it just puts me in an even further bind.
Commissioner Lee Jones expressed concern that parking may also be an issue for potential poll workers.
People who are working during Election Day downtown, are they having to pay for their own parking?
So my understanding is that it's Election Day for the city of Bloomington as well, and so I don't believe parking enforcement works on
that. And do people understand that they won't get a ticket if they park without paying?
I have no reason to believe that they don't understand that. I've not had a parking issue on Election Day.
Brown asked the commissioners to make a decision on increasing poll work pay by April 1st. The next meeting of the Monroe County Board of Commissioners is scheduled for March 20th. In other election news, touchscreen voting is coming to northern Indiana. The St. Joseph County Election Board is spending $3 million for new touchscreen voting machines. The South Bend Tribune reports the county officials approved the expenditure Tuesday. The new machines will be put in all 146 of the county's polling locations. In asking for the purchase, St. Joseph County Election Board said their 15-year-old voting machines are plagued with maintenance issues and cannot be updated. The Tribune reports election officials want to give poll workers experience on the machines this year in preparation for the larger 2020 presidential election.
The Bloomington Commission on Sustainability is organizing to provide feedback on the city's proposed transportation plan. In the commission's March 12th meeting, member Cynthia Brettheim said the plan needs substantial reworking.
There's so much that's not working with the transportation plan, and the grids and some of the suggestions that they've made don't fit what the city's layout is. So it would be really hard to implement them or to okay it.
Brettheim observed that in some instances, the city would have to tear down houses to accommodate proposed streets. She also took issue with some of the data used in the plan, including traffic counts and activity rates.
The adult physical activity rates from the census tract, it looked like it was from the 60s when real estate agents were still redlining anything on the west side. It lists the whole west side as obese, inactive, and the whole east side as active and everybody's healthy. And I'm sorry, but that's where we came from not very long ago. We had a real prejudice against the west side, and I think that chart is not footnoted. We don't know where it came from. We don't know what year it's from, and it either needs to be removed or give credible footnotes. I want to see the proof that exists, and otherwise remove it entirely.
Commission member Aaron Hatch said some aspects of the proposed transportation plan conflict with the city's conservation ethos.
One of the things is some of the proposed road expansions contradict the Environmental Commission's Bloomington Habitat Connectivities report because they're proposed in some of their highlighted environmentally sensitive areas. So it'd be potentially inserting roadways into right now relatively undisturbed, undeveloped, and environmentally sensitive green spaces.
Hatch and Commission member Pam Weaver discussed differences between the proposed transportation plan and transportation elements in the city's comprehensive master plan.
I feel like they should actually expand a little bit of the discussion on, forget the word that they use, but basically like Uber and Lyft, and how do you incorporate that into this sort of plan? Because they made a direct note saying these programs might lead to increased vehicle miles traveled and potential emissions, which is in direct contradiction to like some of the things in the CMP saying they want to reduce vehicle miles traveled and emissions. And so how do you use this sort of plan to kind of balance out the need for increased accessibility to a reliable transportation while still meeting the CMP's goals.
Yeah, because they flat out said that there had been a reduction in the use of public transit, likely connected to increased use of things like Uber, which is counter to climate preservation.
The Bloomington City Council has set a March 20th deadline for the public to propose amendments to the transportation plan. Bretheim said not enough time has been given to review the 167-page plan and proposed changes. Interested commission members may form a subcommittee to review targeted items within the plan. Hatch said comments from the Sustainability Commission could carry more weight than those from an individual resident. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Support for WFHB is provided by attorneys Eric Slotograph and Ben Neoff. Slotograph Neoff is located at 200 East 3rd Street in downtown Bloomington, assisting families and small businesses in meeting the legal challenges of life, providing estate planning and wills, as well as family law services. More information is available at 812-332-6000 or at slotographlegal.com. Slotograph Neoff, law for business, community, and life.
The City of Bloomington is re-examining its decision to repair instead of replace the downtown 4th Street parking garage. The city administration previously pressured the Bloomington City Council to pass a measure to tear down and rebuild the city's 35-year-old downtown garage. In today's feature report, WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaks with Bloomington Deputy Mayor Mick Renison.
The council in December voted to approved the Trades District Garage as a new construction project and opted not to take the administration's recommendation to replace the 4th Street Garage instead of repair it. And so we've been working on getting updated repair figures for the 4th Street Garage, and the original estimate we got from our engineering consultant CE Solutions in May of 2018 was $1.1 million for repairs. And the new estimate that was obtained in February of 2019 was $1.4 million for repairs. So there's obviously some additional degradation since the earlier estimate was given, and that was going to make it difficult to use the existing funds in the parking facilities budget to complete the repairs and do other repairs to the other two parking garages that the city owns and manages, without depleting those funds entirely and then not having funds for future repairs to the other two structures as per our normal 10-year capital plan, which has several million more dollars worth of repairs in those other two structures forthcoming in the next 6 or 7 years. So upon learning of that at an internal work session that the council called last week, I think they have now determined that they'd like to revisit that vote that they had in February and reconsider rebuilding the 4th Street garage instead of repairing it. I think another variable that they learned that we had presented earlier, but now I think maybe has become a bit more apparent, is that even if we were to do the $1.4 million in repairs, 4th Street would have a lifespan of about 5 more years, and then it would still have to be torn down. It just does not have the ability to be repaired to a level that extends its life out 10 or 15 more years. The garage is 35 years old today. It's typically supposed to last 40 or 50 years, so in 5 years it would turn 40. There's enough degradation to just suggest that it's not worth repairing and then knowing we'd have to replace it 5 years from now. And that would disrupt the downtown economy and businesses. And we also know a convention center is going to be likely coming out of the ground across the street in that same time horizon. And all that disruption just seems now, I think, to the council members, to their credit, it's rare to revisit a decision and rare to do it this quickly. And I think with new information, they've now sensed that it might be a better move to just go ahead and replace the 4th Street garage. So their timeline is to reconsider their vote on March 27th at a committee of the whole meeting and follow that up on April 3rd with a final vote, which then would give us some direction. Either way, we have the repair estimates and we could proceed with those. We would have to go back to get an appropriation from another fund. That's just a technical requirement that would have to put us back on the council schedule sometime after the April meeting, if in fact they don't vote to rebuild. If they vote to rebuild, we would immediately initiate the steps in acquiring a construction manager to help us with the project and start working towards a demolition package and a design package that would accelerate the completion of the rebuild.
Mr. Renison, I know that for a couple council members, they were concerned when the proposal to rebuild that 4th Street parking garage came forward because it called for increasing the height of that structure to about 75 feet from, I think a ballpark currently around 40, 45 maybe feet. Is there any indication that if the council is reconsidering a rebuild of that garage, if they would be considering also that increase in height and the height variance that would have to go along with that?
So there are a couple variables that made the administration a little uncomfortable when we were first having these discussions with council about the finished height of the garage, because we have not hired anyone to tell us what that finished height would be. You can do some kind of simple math. Typically, garage floors are 10 feet high. If you look at the existing footprint, assuming that's all we have to work with, and you were to put 500-plus spaces on there, you'd obviously have to go up a few more decks. That might get us to that 70, 75-foot height. But without a completed design or any knowledge of the ability to acquire any additional land around it that might lower the garage height, we felt it was a bit premature to try to get into locking in on a particular height at that time. And that still remains true. I think we've all learned, the council learned from the staff and from some outside members of the community that sat in our construction manager interviews and our architect interviews for the Trades District garage recently, that the convertibility option that many of us thought was a good thing to think about in the event that car traffic and use changes dramatically in the next coming decades was a good thing to consider so we could convert floors to some other uses. However, we learned in these interviews that if you don't know you're going to convert the floors into something other than parking in the next 10 years, you're better off not designing convertible floors. It costs more money up front, makes the garage height higher because the floors have to be 15 feet high each, and it may still make it very expensive to turn it into some other use than what it was planned for. So those were additional pieces of information, I think, that assuaged some of the council members' concerns about height. I know that there still are concerns, and quite frankly, the administration has them as well. We don't want to build something that's out of scale and context to our downtown, but we also know that just to the south of this, a convention center is going to have a hotel. It's probably going to be 7 stories high or so, and new space that might also be a little higher than the current uses that are around that area. So it seems to me as good as any time to be talking about height and height in that particular part of our community, but also being sensitive to what's around these structures so that they don't dominate the landscape and change the look and feel of our community.
Deputy Mayor Renison, just to go back a minute, council had voted in favor of repairing the garage previously, and then you had mentioned that there was an estimate of like $1.1 million in May in order to complete those repairs, and then that estimate jumped up to $1.4 million. And I'm wondering if you could speak to what kind of repairs need to take place at that 4th Street garage and how that conversation has changed from repairing that garage to replacing it.
Well, on the repairs, there are a variety of elements that would need to be refurbished in the existing garage if it were to be kept. And those include the deck surfaces have some cracks in them, some leaks that between freezing and thawing and salt and things on vehicles over the years have degraded the concrete and opened up cracks or fissures in some of the deck surfaces. Those cracks have to be shorn up. Sometimes they require steel to basically kind of pull those pieces together so they don't fail and fall on cars or people. And there's also some structures, what are called sort of the T-braces that hold up various sections of the garage that have also shown some deterioration that also need both concrete and steel reinforcement. Those are the more significant things. And then deck resurfacing, and there's a lot of old plumbing, lighting, electrical and things in the garage that just are outdated and would need to be refurbished just due to regular wear and tear. So there's kind of a combination of normal wear and tear, degradation of concrete and steel, some expected, some not so expected. Then some elevator repairs that have to happen, and also a place where the garage attaches to the overpass over 4th Street that has also some structural issues that need to be repaired. And all those things add up to about $1.4 million now, and that doesn't include the design soft costs. So we're really estimating another couple $100,000 for the design bid and construction inspection that would have to take place if we were to repair the garage. So that's what led, I think, to the council revisiting this subject of rebuilding. again, the administration's position in December was, even at 1.1 million, we think we should rebuild and not go through two different construction projects within 5 years, one that buys us 4.5 years of time, and then another one that's going to take the garage out of commission for a couple years while it has to be rebuilt anyway.
Deputy Mayor Renison, is there anything else that you think folks should know with regards to proposals to rebuild the 4th Street parking garage in downtown Bloomington, or anything at all that you think hasn't really gotten enough attention?
Well, I would just add that I think the original bond estimate for the 4th Street garage was a not to exceed $18.5 million, I think, and that remains true. That hasn't changed. We'll be able to do the project for that amount. I think we're all sensitive to design and height elements. We had agreed with the council back in December that this garage should be the kind of structure that we're all proud of, that aesthetically is pleasing, that it has the ability for some retail on the ground floor, that it might have public art, definitely should have solar generation capacity and a place for bikes and bike lockers and Uber and Lyft to drop off and pick up, and kind of the modern-day garage you would expect to see in a city that's very progressive and thinks about the future a lot like our community does here in Bloomington. So I did find out, too, an interesting thing, that if either the Trades District garage as it is currently planned or the 4th Street garage, if it's rebuilt, happens to, whichever one takes place first, it will be the first ParkSmart certified garage in the state of Indiana. So again, a kind of a nod to the notion of sustainable development in the future, and certainly a reflection of our community's interests.
Bloomington Deputy Mayor Mick Renison, thanks so much for agreeing to speak with us today and for answering some questions with regards to that 4th Street parking garage.
You are welcome.
Support for WFHB comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
Donald Trump has repeatedly called American media fake news. Voices in the Street asks area listeners about their opinions on the current state of American media.
So how do you feel about the media?
How do I feel about the media? The media talks about the media, and people try to badmouth it or whatever. I would simply say that it is typically represents a very important part of the foundation of democracy, and we should treat each story in the media as it should be treated, as a single entity, and we should judge it according to its ability to make verifiable claims, to the extent that it uses testimony.
I think they really do their best to get things right, and I think they're getting a bad rap right now because sometimes they actually show video of what's happening and then they're called liars for it.
I feel like a lot of it is biased towards personal opinions. Like, I feel like just me talking right now, like through the media, of course it's gonna be biased towards like what I think. So I feel like news anchors as people are just kind of like subconsciously biased towards their own opinions rather than what's actually happening.
I'm very grateful for media, because if it wasn't for media, me growing up in a small town of Illinois, I wouldn't have access to a lot of information that I was able to have access to.
I feel like the media just tells you what they want you to hear, that a lot of stuff is covered up, and I choose to go find things myself despite of media.
Honestly, I kind of try to avoid some of it because of all the negativity and craziness, and I'm just like, I don't want that in my life. So I take it in sparingly and only from certain sources.
Pretty good, because I'm planning Media Career Day with some colleagues at work, so that's media's on my mind right now.
Good if you use it responsibly?
I think it's okay, I guess. Well, I don't watch the news so much. I just kind of, I like primary sources more, but So I don't think it's honest enough for me, but it's fine. I'm not complaining too much about it.
Poorly portrayed.
I feel like there's a lot of lies in the media, and that's the way they just get people to view it, by lying.
I mean, it's a great resource. I'm glad it's out there, you know, depending on the media outlet you're talking about. I mean, if you're talking about music, then that's like expression of self that's different than like news media or whatever. It's like I said, you know, everybody has an agenda to push usually. Instead of just being honest, they have something other than what is true to say for whatever reasons.
Man, I don't own TV or have internet at my house, so I don't get a lot of exposure to media. I sort of live my life like a person-to-person type of feel, do everything kind of in the physical form. I think it misleads quite a bit. I think that sometimes it's honest, of course, but I think that sometimes there's an agenda and they try to sway people in certain directions, pin people against each other a lot.
I'm all in favor of it. Yeah, I believe most mainstream media organizations do make an effort to be fair and accurate. I certainly believe there are some national media that certainly slant stories in a way to maybe more favor their demographics, but I think overall, particularly the print media, makes a real effort to be fair and balanced in how they approach their writings and their investigations, and I think most other outlets, whether it's with, you know, through something on the web or otherwise, do value the important role that they play in our society to be arbiters of the truth and sort of tell the truth and not tell us how it should be, but tell us what's going on and let us make our own decisions about it.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by executive producer Wes Martin.
Voices in the Street was produced by Isaac Gonzalez. Our engineer today is Kevin Oliver. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. For WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Big Talk with Michael Glab, a WFHB News and Public Affairs program highlighting the issues, events, and people in South Central Indiana. That's coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a daily local news volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.